Disasters cannot be totally prevented, but their impact can be reduced. Prepare and Prevent, a production of the Disaster Management Coordination Agency, DMCA, aims to educate and empower residents on Muntrat to be prepared to respond to emergencies and disasters. Prepare and Prevent, aired every Tuesday, 5:15 p.m. on ZGB Radio, also provides relevant and timely messages about what you can do to protect yourself and your family before, during, and after natural and man-made events.
In this week's edition, we'll bring to you part two of a special feature focusing on earthquake awareness and preparedness. As recently as last week, two earthquakes occurred in the Lesser Antilles, one on Thursday, September 22, 2016, northeast of St. Kitts and Nevis, with a magnitude of 4.1 and a depth of 96 kilometers, and the other, Monday, September 19, 2016, south of Dominica. It had a magnitude of 4.3 and a depth of 173 kilometers. This brings the total number of recorded earthquakes to 25 so far in 2016 in the English-speaking Eastern Caribbean. Hello and welcome again to the program Prepare and Prevent. I'm your host, Shirley Nkwili. Montserrat, because of its tectonic landscape and its location in the northern Leeward Islands, is exposed to large and potentially damaging earthquakes. Hence the need for residents to be better prepared to survive and recover during and after an earthquake. Our guest director of the Seismic Research Center, SRC, in Trinidad, Dr. Richie Robertson, will continue to share information on some of the most common concerns and questions about earthquakes. The SRC is the authoritative source for information on the status of earthquake and volcanic activity in the English-speaking Eastern Caribbean, and provides the management and the support for Montserrat Volcano Observatory, MVO. I continue by asking Dr. Robertson, if an individual gets trapped under debris during or after an earthquake, what should he or she do while waiting for help?
If you get trapped, what you want to do is try to remain calm as much as possible, depending on where you're trapped. You want to be conscious of the fact that you may have a limited amount of air, for example. So you want to calmness helps you to breathe slower, to take in less air, and you have it longer to survive. You want to try to make sure that you don't get and ingest too much if there's dust and things like that around, if you could cover your face somehow. And you want to be in a position where you could somehow attract the attention of people who would be trying to rescue. So whether it is to hit on, you know, a pipe or some way of attracting attention, you probably want to conserve as much as possible your energy and your air and whatever is you have available until you actually have rescuers coming towards you, which is why I come back to being calm. Being calm means that if you're trapped, your first instinct is starting to scream and call and all that. If you think of it immediately after the event, that might not be the right time to start doing that until you probably have some indication that there's people around, so you conserve your energy until then. I think the key thing is to remain calm, to conserve as much as possible your energy, conserve as much as possible the air and the spaces that you have, and then be in a position that if you think there's a chance of somebody outside there trying to find a way of getting their attention in a manner which is calm, using up as less energy as possible, because you don't know how long you're going to be in that position. So the one big worry that people have when they're indoors is that they might be trapped in a collapsed building. Based on what we know of the structures that you have, the chances of that happening versus you're trying to run outside and hurting yourself is more likely to hurt yourself to run outside. So we suggest duck or run a hole, get under something that is sturdy, that would withstand the weight of the fallen things, and stay there, wait it out until the ground stops shaking. Once the ground has stopped shaking, you then want to exit the building as quickly as you can and as safely as you can without panicking, and stay outside. If there really was a vigorous earthquake that caused any potential damage to the building, you want to have the building checked before you go back in, because usually a large magnitude earthquake and that causes damage would be followed by aftershocks, which if the building had been damaged in the first place structurally, the aftershocks would probably cause even further damage. So you want to have the building checked first. The little earthquakes that you have, should give you a chance to practice that kind of response. The earthquakes may not be such that they would have caused any structural damage. So when I tell you go outside, it may be that depending on what the shaking was, the building may not be damaged at all.
Okay, some people are fearful, including myself, of being swallowed up in the earth during an earthquake. We see the earth open up. We are not sure whether to stay inside, if we are inside, and to stay outside if we are outside. What should residents who have these concerns do?
You do have ground rupture. Areas where at the surface, you can see some sort of fracturing, some sort of displacement of the land, where one part moves relative to the other. It does happen in large magnitude earthquakes, very large magnitude earthquakes. It doesn't happen all the time because often the energy is too far away. It doesn't happen. But even when the ground rupture happens, usually rupturing happens where one part of the earth moves, slides past the other. It's very unlikely for you to have a rupturing where a large enough cavity opens that will take you in as a human being whole, unless you're really, really tiny. And even if it does, it's not going to be a bottomless hole that you can't come out of. So your least worry, I suspect, when you're getting out of the building after the event happened, or if you are outside, is this rupture actually opening up beneath your foot and somehow you're sinking into it and you're not being able to do anything? Because if you're there outside and that thing start to develop, you probably would see a crack first and be able to shift out of the way. Your biggest worry if you're outside in the open is that something might fall on you.
Okay, now let us talk about the triangle of life, which is a controversial theory about how to survive a major earthquake. It typically means that during an earthquake, it is safer to curl up next to a desk or bed rather than to go under it. Do you recommend this back, Dr. Richie Robertson?
My simple answer to that is no, for two reasons. One, because to me it doesn't make sense. Secondly, the scientific evidence would support the duck cover and hole response rather than standing next to something. Now, why it doesn't make sense to me? During an earthquake, what the duck cover and hole suggests is that it's based on the experience of a particular rescue person who has gone into earthquakes in a particular part of the world and has found that when you go into a building that's been affected by a large magnitude earthquakes where you have had failures of the building, roof damage and all that, he has found certain areas next to walls, next to large structures, which appear to have no debris. And it seems that based on that, he has concluded that during the earthquake, these spaces are still empty of debris and therefore they are safe. My counter to that is that during an earthquake, things shake and they move around. So if you go into the building after and see that a chair is not in a particular position, it doesn't mean that during the earthquake, it wasn't there at some point. So you go and stand next to something. You're not covering yourself where there's a cavity. Something could still fall in your head. So it doesn't make sense to me that your response during an earthquake is to go and try to find a strong structure. The other thing that you'll have to do if you have to do that is that you have to determine where the strong structures, where the places that's not going to fail. And most often people don't know that. So you're taking a chance. I put to you this most sensible thing to do is to try to protect yourself wherever you are from the failures that can occur, because you don't know exactly where they occur. And that's where the DCH thing is based on. It's based on the fact that wherever you are in the building, it's possible that something could fail and fall on you. And you want to make yourself as small as possible. You want to protect your head, and you want to try to hold on to something that is firm, because things move around and you want to not move. While the triangle of life idea is saying that you have to try to find a space and you stay there and you don't do anything. Both based on the research that's been done. So I would discount that. I would suggest to people that what they need to do is they need to look at their own structures, where they live, where they work. Try to determine areas in the building, perhaps, which may be structurally more strong than you think. And I suspect that you stand a greater chance of survival than trying to find this triangle of life, which you don't really know it is.
Okay, here's another interesting question. Some people on island are of the view that if an earthquake hits Montserrat, the island will not be impacted by a tsunami. But if an earthquake hits another island, Montserrat could be impacted by a tsunami. What are your views on this notion?
One of the main ways in which tsunamis are generated is by large magnitude earthquakes. You have to have certain conditions, in a sense, met because of how the process goes. It's a process where a large part of the Earth's body of water, the oceans, have been disturbed by a push that has occurred. Essentially, push is occurring because a large magnitude earthquake has occurred beneath the ocean, first of all. And when I say large magnitude, it has to be about 6.5 magnitude. The earthquake should be fairly shallow, less than 60 kilometers. Why? Because one of the things that you want to happen, you want to have surface rupture. Remember you were asking about underground when the ground opened up? You want to have displacement. You want to have a part of the Earth's surface beneath the sea, ocean, being pushed up relative to another part. And because it is that pushing up process that then pushes the water that is above it, that causes disturbance. Once you push the water, you then generate a wave. The wave goes in all directions outwards. When it now gets close to structures, like an island, for example, the wave essentially start interacting with that. Just like an ocean wave, this wave have a very large wavelength. From one crest of the wave to the next crest is very big, a very big distance. So as the front of the wave hits the coastline, the back is still coming in. And what happens is that as it gets in, it starts essentially getting higher, and that's where you have a tsunami being generated. That's why people would think that usually tsunamis that should affect Montserrat from tectonic earthquakes should be from a source outside of Montserrat, because it has to be generated away from Montserrat and then interact with Montserrat. If an earthquake happens here, it's going to push the water away, and so the areas that's going to be affected will be away. But remember I said that the earthquake has to happen under the ocean. So an earthquake on Montserrat itself is not going to generate a tsunami because it's not disturbing the sea. The earthquake has to be offshore Montserrat in a certain body of water. It's not an earthquake that's going to be close to Montserrat. It has to have, again, the other thing that the earthquake has to have, a certain size in terms of magnitude. It has to have displacement where one part is pushed up relative to another. And you have to have a certain amount of water above it to get pushed. If you don't have those conditions, it's not going to be so easy. The only way an earthquake that happens on Montserrat could perhaps cause a tsunami is if the earthquake results in a big landslide that then dumps a lot of material into the ocean, that then pushes the ocean, that then causes a tsunami somewhere else. The earthquake that would cause a tsunami that would affect Montserrat has to happen away from Montserrat for the wave to come into Montserrat. That's where people... So what people are saying is not really wrong. It's just an interpretation based on how tsunamis are generated. So, for example, the Montserrat, Soufrière's Montserrat eruption, I think the Boxing Day event generated a small tsunami because it dumped so much material into the sea that it generated a tsunami that actually affected Montserrat, but it also affected Guadeloupe because the wave interacted with the coastline of Montserrat on the western side. You had a small tsunami that came up in Isles Bay, and then you had something in Guadeloupe. So that can happen.
Okay, wrapping up, any final comments, Dr. Robertson?
Well, I think I would say that people need to bear in mind that we live in a multi-hazard part of the world. We have earthquakes, we have hurricanes, we have windstorms, we have volcanic eruptions. We have lots of hazards. It's a beautiful part of the world to live in, but it's a hazardous part of the world. And if you live here, you really need to factor in that you have to be knowledgeable, you have to live your life such that you could respond to and cope with the hazards that you have. And earthquakes happen to be one of them. Montserrat can't discount earthquakes in the context of the hazard that they're exposed to. You certainly can have large magnitude earthquakes that could have caused damage in Montserrat. It has happened in the past, and therefore it could happen in the future. So when you plan and when you put your things in place for living your lives normally, you have to factor in the seismic hazard.
And that was the director of the Seismic Research Center, SRC, in Trinidad, Dr. Richie Robinson, who provides management and support for the Montserrat Volcano Observatory, MVO.
Okay, let's see. Batteries, flashlight, canned foods, bottled water, teddy bear.
So when the big wind is howling and the roof is creaking and everything is dark and I'm getting really scared, I can cut out with my teddy and feel safe, right?
Planning for emergencies? Plan for children. Pack a favorite toy to comfort your child during and after disasters, as well as books, games, and snacks to keep children occupied and calm. This message is brought to you by UNICEF, SEDERA, and this radio station.
And that's it for our program today, focusing on earthquake preparedness. Throughout the hurricane period, the DMC will continue to provide you with information, advice, tips, and reminders to help you get prepared. Follow us on our Facebook page, Montserrat Disaster Management Coordination Agency, and our website, www.dmca.gov.ms. Tune in next time for another informative and useful Prepare and Prevent program. I am Shirley Nkwili, reminding you that during an earthquake, drop, cover, and hold on to protect yourself from falling objects.
Prepare and Prevent, a production of the Disaster Management Coordination Agency, DMCA. Be aware. Get ready. Stay prepared.